It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Oh, I am back. I am so back and so glad to be back. This is The Horn. This program is live. It is the 14th day of July 2017, Bastille Day. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the real-time multimedia live zany wacky extravaganza that is the live chat room that takes place during the 3 hours of the program Monday through Friday. Just go to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. The conversation's fine. You will be greeted by Anatole and Laborman and V.T. Blom. That's who's wandered in so far. A lot of people may not know I'm on the air. And you will, of course, be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, is not folding space into a 100-degree-plus man cave. No damn way. And I understand. I really, really do. Because it's, that's not comfortable. And I know from not comfortable. Let's see, it was Wednesday when I was walking across from, Cannon House office building side of Capitol Hill, all the way, it's really not that far, all the way over to, the Dirksen Senate office building.
And it's hot.
And it was past hot. The heat index got to like 115. The actual temperature itself was more like, 98. And I mean, it was ugly. Right on the corner there in front of the Methodist building on First, just right there by the Supreme Court, there's always a vendor who sells popsicles and bottled water and soda pop and things. And I was wringing wet. I looked at him and said, I want the coldest bottle of water that you have. And bless his heart, he was kind enough to come out, flipped open his water cooler, and dug down in it and found me a bottle that actually had a hunk of ice floating inside it. I got the idea that he probably freezes them, and then, you get the idea. And, it was good. It was ambrosia. And so I pounded that down and then went about my merry way, going through security to get into Dirksen. And from the Department of Ill, I need a shower with bleach. I knew from past experience that there was a little gelato shop and coffee place down in the basement of Dirksen, and I figured that my innards could stand it, so I went down there and I got a scoop of orange honey cardamom gelato. I can do things like that now that I'm not diabetic anymore. And it was cool and refreshing, and I was enjoying it, when all of a sudden I heard this voice. And I thought, oh, I hate that voice. Kind of one of those voices that would make milk curdle. And a couple of guys in suits, I was sitting there at a little table, and they said, can we borrow these chairs? And I said, sure, take them. And who walks up but Bro Fromix himself? The frothy one. Rick Sanctum Santorum. Scarce feet away from me. I behaved myself. I did not see any particular value in being arrested by the Capitol Police for upbraiding him for being the pretentious, self-righteous, right-wing asshole that we all know him to be. But he was actually there schmoozing over health care. He likes to think he's still got some sort of influence or power, when in fact he's a CNN guy now. And I don't know how he's still got a job at CNN doing what he's doing, engaging in partisan consulting with the hacks and flacks of the right wing, who will not be happy until 23 million people have been done out of their ability to go to the doctor when they're sick. Or, perhaps more importantly, and we kind of neglect this from time to time. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We neglect this from time to time. I always describe it in those terms, taking away the right of people, the ability of people to go to the doctor when they're sick. But in many ways, what they're trying to take away is also the ability of people to go to the doctor when they're well. Wellness doctoring, we recognize more and more, matters. Getting out in front of things so that they don't become problems that are harder to solve later. Well, that's what they're trying to take away. And then there's things like well baby visits. They want to take that away too. So you, yeah. But there he was. And damned if I didn't feel this cloying, miasmic, protoplasmic ick descend onto the entire situation. Yeah, I even kind of surreptitiously snapped a picture of him. You can't see his face, but you can tell it's him, and then with the hair and the sort of mostly turned away. But yeah, that's Bro Fromix himself. I'm sorry. I tend when I've been away for a couple of days, I tend to talk about what I was doing while I was gone. We should probably jump right into a big conversation about Uday's emails. But his emails! But his emails, they were beautiful emails. because I realized while I was gone because of a message I got. You know, sometimes, and you've heard me do it, start the program by saying, well, I assume that by this time of day, this particular issue or that particular issue has been worn right the hell out, no tread left on it at all. Because, you know, there's a day's worth of progressive broadcasting out there. And the Horn Family Community Congregation listens to a pretty wide variety, a pretty broad sampling of them. But it turns out, based on something I heard while I was gone, when the Don Jr. emails started coming out, my whole theory there sort of fell apart. This idea that there are that issues get just worn down to a nub, because on the day on the day that the Don Jr. emails broke, I was told that a certain progressive broadcasters program began with a discussion not of Don Jr.'s emails or the fact that what the Trump regime has denied for months turns out to actually be true, namely that they were coordinating and colluding with Russian interests in the election, but instead opened his program talking about, and I kid you not, sex robots. Now, this is weird enough, or would be weird enough, if it was, say, coming from,
Alex Jones.
Yeah? Because that would make it that'd make it pretty weird. Because Alex Jones does some weird stuff. What was it? 3-4 weeks ago, we had the audio of Alex Jones talking about the hybrid monkey jellyfish, glow in the dark hybrid monkey jellyfish. Yeah, remember that? And I mean, that's pretty bizarre. But I don't usually expect to hear that sort of lunacy on our side of the political aisle. Because the other side has it, I mean, the other side has that nailed down. The latest one of the latest pieces of wild ass bullshit floating around being and coming, of course, from
Alex Jones.
Just wait a minute.
This may strike your listeners as way out, but we actually believe that there is a colony on Mars that is populated by children who were kidnapped and sent into space on a 20-year ride. So that once they get to Mars, they have no alternative but to be slaves on the Mars colony. There's all kinds of...
Well, look, I know 90% of the NASA missions are secret, and I've been told by high-level NASA engineers that you have no idea. There's so much stuff going on. But then it goes off into all that. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing the media jumps on. But I know this. We see a bunch of a mechanical wreckage on Mars, and people say, oh, look, it looks like, you know, mechanics. They go, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Clearly, they don't want us looking into what's happening. Every time probes go over, they turn them off.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, of course,
Alex Jones.
And his Lulu guest talking about the child sex slave colony on Mars. And like I said, we've got when the ice cream truck comes down the are there still ice cream trucks? Comes down the neighborhood street in the middle of summer, you expect there to be popsicles in freezers and not, you know, steaming mugs of hot chocolate in 100-degree weather. We've come to expect what we come to expect from the right wing, but lo and behold, no. Apparently, if you are funded by a Russian billionaire oligarch and, say, a skeevy Russian website called Sputnik, instead of talking about the most explosive piece of breaking news of the day, maybe you'll open your program talking about sex robots. Because, you know, sex robots. Yeah, I know. So maybe we'll need to maybe we'll need to talk about Eric's email thingy. Yeah, sounds like. Steve in New York asking simply, what do you expect from someone on RT? I know. Steve also pointing out, a member of the fraternity of Steve, now we know where Comet Pizza is. There really is a Comet Pizza, and it's run by child slaves on a comet making pizzas for the secret NASA base on Mars. And did you know that NASA actually had to reach out and say, no, we just wanted to let you know that we don't have a child slave colony on Mars. We don't have any people on Mars at all because Mars can't support life and we don't have the technology to have life support for people on Mars right now. Just thought you'd like to know that. No, really. So I have a feeling we'll be talking about Donald Jr.'s the email thing, collusion. Are they measuring him for? No, they're not measuring him for anything. Don't kid yourself. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing's going to happen to Donald Jr. There's not going to be a perp walk. There's not going to be an orange jumpsuit. No, the nasty orange shower shoes. No. As Asa points out, it's not weird at all, Bob. Not weird at all. Consider the Sputnik oligarch billionaire has invested in a sex robot factory in Inner Mongolia. I guess, you know, capitalism. If there's a market for sex robots, if you build them, just ask, you know, just ask Energy Secretary Rick Perry. All you have to do is supply, and the market will create itself, because that's what they're going to do with coal. And, of course, when I was in D.C., I was there about coal. And grab your wallets. You might want to. Because your power bill might be going up. An article by Chris Tomlinson in the Houston Chronicle last week . Secretary of Energy Rick Perry may soon order Americans to pay more for electricity to keep Trump's promises to the pure coal miners, nuclear power plants, and electric companies. Because apparently the Secretary of Energy has a little-known power to assess the reliability of the energy grid. Back in April, Rick Perry signed off on an order in the Energy Department to examine the extent to which continued regulatory burdens, as well as mandates and tax and subsidy policies, are responsible for forcing the premature retirement of baseload power plants. The result of this analysis will help the federal government formulate sound policies to protect the nation's electric grid. And there always is a little-known law that lets the Secretary of Energy, on his own initiative, declare a national reliability emergency. In which case, the government, you know, you and me, we the people, trying to form that more perfect union, would buy electricity from power plants, say nuclear plants and coal-fired power plants, right? And thereby make sure that, say, coal miners kept working. Well, I tell you what, Republicans love that free market until they don't they? Mm-hmm. What we got to have here is a free market. We can't have the government picking. Do you remember that? Do you remember that from the 8-year-long nightmare of our Kenyan Muslim usurpation, when Republican after Republican after Republican ran to find a camera to stick their mugs in front of us? That Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House, well, he's a-picking winners and losers. And what about that goddamn Solyndra? Wasted all that taxpayer money on that stupid solar power energy. Hell, sun might burn out any minute. It ain't reliable, that solar energy. Why is we subsidizing it? And them windmill thingies. Even as soon as the internet latency catches up, Sparky will type turbines, Bob, turbines, in the chat room. So, you know, grab your wallets, because you're about to pay, you may very well be, probably are, about to pay for some welfare for some pure coal miners. Really? It corporate welfare. For coal miners, and I'm sure people in West Virginia are just thrilled, because we got to protect those coal jobs, both of them. I think coal. Let's see, number one employer in West Virginia is West Virginia University Health Systems. Number two is Walmart. You've got to go a long way down the list to get to coal. But we're gonna protect those jobs. Not so worried about the JCPenney jobs or the Sears jobs. Whole bunch of Kmart jobs disappeared. See, there it is. Wind turbines, Bob. Oh, no, when we're talking about... But then again, when we're talking about little wing nuts, they say windmills. Uh-huh, windmills. Can't rely on the wind. Might not blow sometimes. Don't blow all the time. Don't burn all the time like coal burns all the time once you set fire to it. Hey, oh dear. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Subject line, sexy time robots. All caps. Michael doesn't scream at me very often. The entire first hour, Bob! The entire first hour, and then some. And yet, we've seen Donald Trump Jr., you must talk about the sexy time robots. 1 hour. Or check no clear. Brought to you by Sputnik. Mm-hmm. is 1 hour. We need you to be talking about sexy time robots. Soon we will plant sexy time robot in bed of Bernard Sanders. Then we will make sexy time robot we plant in bed of Bernard Sanders look like Hillary Clinton. And of course, you know, when you're in D.C., other places too, but there's a TV tuned to some news channel everywhere, and it was inescapable the Donald Trump Jr. email. Okay, can we just? He's 39 years old. His dad refers to him as a. He's a good kid. He's a nice boy. He's a good kid. Yeah, how many of us out there refer to 39-year-olds as kids and boys? My dad always got kind of irked watching college football when the coach would be interviewed and said, "Oh, these are good boys. These are good kids. We got a good group of kids this year. I think they're going to give it everything they got out there on the gridiron. You know, each side's got 11 people. You tee it up, and you find out who's got the better kids. We got good kids." My dad would say, "You know, they're young men." Well, on the other hand, Donald Trump describes his son, his 39-year-old son, the same age, I might note, as the president of France, as a good boy. He's a nice kid. He's a good boy. Oof. And I guess Comrade Kumquat is on his way home now from Paris. I got a giggle out of that. I don't know about you, but I did. Got a big giggle out of it. After he made Emmanuel Macron wait to greet him, and that was obvious. That was obviously, you know, staged. I don't think melanoma held him up. But then they announced that one of the first orders of business, and this was Wednesday. Was it Wednesday? No, it was yesterday. Yesterday. One of the first orders of business would be the planned tour. No, really, tour. I mean, I have a hard time figuring out how you do a tour. No, they were going to tour Napoleon's tomb. Here's your letter N, there's your letter A. Look, there's the B for Bonaparte. See, we're touring the tomb. And the minute I heard that, I literally laughed out loud. Really? Oh my. Our Gallic host it put some thought into this one. Le Donald will think that we are honoring him with a tour of magnificent tomb of Napoleon Bonaparte. He will completely miss the irony. You know what the problem is with the French language? Yeah. The French language don't have a word for entrepreneurs. But they do have a word, ironie. I think it is in the French ironie and ironique is the same as it is in l'anglais. So what we will do is we will shake hands and we will make over him and let him say something off color to my wife, and then we will take him to tour the tomb of Napoleon. And he will never know that we are making great fun of him by saying that, by reminding him that emperors who think they run the world, sooner or later they wind up in tomb. And of course he would, because Donald Trump, he does not know what it is he does not know. It will not dawn on him that Napoleon was megalomaniac. No one will notice that Napoleon appointed members of his own family who were in no way, competent to many governmental positions. And so we here back in La Belle France, we will find it très risible. And the Trump people, they will think they are merely being honored. And then the next day, we will invite him to Bastille Day Parade, which, of course, we celebrate the opening of the Bastille prison and the release of many, many political prisoners, and ultimately the Révolution Française of 1793. Some wanted to show him a tumbrel. You call it in English, tumbrel. But we thought he might catch on to joke. So we not show him tumbrel. I laughed my ass off. I did. Really? Really? Welcome to Paris, Monsieur le Président. First thing on itinerary. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to see in Paris. I mean, there's that whole damn Versailles thing, or as they pronounce it in Kentucky, Versailles. I mean, there's Versailles. There's the Louvre. Any number of other museums, the great Notre Dame, Saint-Chapelle, Montmartre, La Tour Eiffel, huh? They had dinner there. But what's the first thing they showed him? Napoleon's tomb. Yeah, you see Napoleon, he'd die, and we'd stick him in a box, and we'd put him over there. It's a little strange, the French sense of humor. You must remember they gave the Legion of Honor to Jerry Lewis. But I got it. I was kind of surprised that nobody in the for-profit media mentioned that. Maybe they were afraid that that humorless guys in black suits who talk to their wrists and have skinny black ties would show up. But it's not, it's not advocating anything. It's not saying anything should happen. It's just, well, it's because when it dawned on me exactly what they were doing, something else came to mind. Which, if you ever thought that maybe Marcus Aurelius could be gotten to sit still long enough for it, it might be interesting, by the poet Shelley. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies." I've been doing the French accent, so I almost said visage. Near them, on the sand, half-sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal these words appear: my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. I thought of Ozymandias the minute that, because it's the same principle. Yeah, Don, I know you think you're the neatest thing since sliced golf balls. But it all ends the same way. So a little, as we say here in La Belle France, humilité might be in order.
Not saying, just saying.
So it's 24 minutes before the hour. And let me just take a moment to note that it is Friday on the front porch. I absolutely wanted to make sure that I got home in time so that we would have a broadcast this week, so that we would have Friday on the front porch. Because I love Friday on the front porch. I love that freewheeling, multi-participant conversation that we have. Because it so doesn't happen anywhere else. And so here in about, 20 minutes or so, Sparky will fire up the Horn Skype chat group. And you're more than welcome to participate and attend and enjoy. If you've never done it before, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, one word. And he'll show you the breadcrumb trail, get you into the group, and next thing you know, you'll be engaged in a most unique conversation that will end our week. If you absolutely cannot participate in Skype, well, we've got a phone line available for you. The stress line, 304-663-4676. And we can have one person on that line. So that's available to you, too. I just double-checked to make sure that we are connected. And we are, via Bluetooth, to the gizmo box. And eventually, I'm going to add, I really am, another phone line. But we'll have to do the fundraising for a gizmo box for that. A different gizmo box. Anyway, that's the plan. And I didn't mention at the beginning of the program, because I was in such an all-fired hurry to get things going. But this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. And you guys were amazing. We managed to raise 2 weeks' worth of funds in 1 week so that I was able to take this trip. And I cannot thank you enough for it. Now, the downside to that is that that put us basically behind a week for the general funding and upkeep of the Horn. D.C. is, you know, well, the trip ain't cheap. So we'll try to raise $200 this evening. be great if we could. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13. We'll take that rounded up half penny and put it toward Agnes's masseur bill. And I think there were probably a lot of masseur work while I was gone, because it's very stressful when we're separated one from the other. As I said, I went to D.C. because there was a meeting at the National Academy of Science regarding the ongoing review of the peer-reviewed and published studies of the health impacts of mountaintop removal on people in the communities. And so it went on for 2 days. I got an opportunity to address the committee each of the 2 days. I have a sense, I think, for what will eventually happen when the committee publishes its findings. They will find that the studies regarding the health impacts of mountaintop removal on the communities around them are valid. They'll find that there is something going on, that something about mountaintop removal is not good for people. And then they will say, more research is needed. Which will be a shame. Because more research isn't needed to determine that it's bad for people to live around this stuff, this practice, this predatory business. If there is an argument to be made that more research is needed, it is only to determine how many people are impacted. Because the word proximity to mountaintop removal got tossed around a lot. But given that we're talking about particles of dust 1/100th the size, the diameter of a human hair, and given that those particles of dust, once ingested into the human body, can begin wreaking absolute havoc with various and sundry systems, it becomes imperative to know how far they travel. We don't necessarily know that yet. But we're talking about particles that are launched up into the industrial scale wind zones by launch vehicles, namely blasts with the explosive force of, say, 25 cruise missiles. And you got to figure those things can travel. We do, for purposes of protecting communities, we need to know how many communities are within a risk or sacrifice zone. I think it's safe to say that it's not just people living immediately below the sites. I mean, hell, it may be tourists in the New River Gorge National River Recreation Area. It may be, because they're here this week, they're here. It may be the Boy Scouts at the great big humongous jamboree that's going to create a logistical nightmare in southern West Virginia this weekend, or this week, or whatever. Because there's going to be thousands and thousands of moms and dads for the Boy Scout Jamboree over on the reclaimed, abandoned mountaintop removal toxic waste site where the Boy Scouts now have their great big humongous campground, and for which they got a tax exemption when they rent out the facilities for profit-making purposes, not related to Boy Scouting, because, you know, welfare. Yeah, really, we do Boy Scout welfare, Boy Scout camp welfare in this state. Every other hotel, if they rent out a room or something like that, they pay the tax. There's taxes. But not if, say, you're some Republican or some corporation that wants to rent out the Boy Scout camp for an executive retreat. Nope. Sorry. Voters went to the polls and said, oh, shucks, taxes suck, especially for those kind of people. That'd be kind of offensive asking that Boy Scout camp to pay taxes, wouldn't it? But you reckon mom and dad, Eagle Scout mom and dads, would kind of like to know if Precious Lumpkin's son is breathing cancer-causing particulates? At the, you know, when they're here celebrating nature and they're not tying skills and working toward their Eagle Scout badge so that they can be admirals and generals and you know, or academy grads in the near future. You reckon mom and dad would like to know that? I'd like to know that. I don't like the idea of scouts getting poisoned. Or tourists getting poisoned. Or, you know, hillbillies getting poisoned. So, that's where I am on that topic. Yeah, it was an interesting week. It's always fun. I did learn, and thanks very kindly, I can't remember who did it, but somebody told me on Twitter about the VRE, the Virginia Railway Express. And it runs from Manassas to D.C. in the morning and runs from D.C. to Manassas in the evening. And for future purposes, it could be really, really handy. I wasn't able to do it this time through because the first day's meeting started at 1, and the next day's meeting started at 9, and neither one of them were conducive to using the VRE. But that could beat the dickens out of fighting traffic in and out of D.C. on one of the East Coast's largest parking lots, namely Interstate 66. Oh, it's a stressful little ride. I never cease to be amazed at the people who are, you know, there's four lanes of traffic and none of them are moving. But you get a little bit of 15, 20 mile an hour flow, and all of a sudden, somebody will pass you on the right, zip in front of you, cheat over into the HOV lane. There's only one person in the car, long enough to get back in. And hoo-wee, they're going to get to Washington, D.C. every bit of a second and a half before me. Because they're in a hurry. And quite often, that hurry results in, you know, pile-ups and crack-ups that make you not get to D.C. anytime soon. I thought I was really getting lucky coming out on Wednesday. Left D.C. about 5:15. I had meetings, including the one in Dirksen where I And I couldn't get back to the shower fast enough just to get all the Santorum off of me. And things were, we were making reasonable progress. And usually when you get past the Beltway, then traffic will begin to flow again. But no, it was a parking lot all the way to exit 47A. And so I think I finally got into the room at about, 7:30 or so. Along the way, Steve from Georgistan and Ms. Karen checked in on me to make sure that I wasn't in some nasty D.C. hellhole jail. I appreciate that. If I had been, it would have been a real problem. But I wasn't there to protest, and I didn't. I didn't go down to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and stick my middle finger in the air and go, "Hey, Trump!" Didn't do that. This was pretty much just business. National Academy of Sciences building is about two blocks off of 8th Street, Chinatown. So I got a little walk through Chinatown. I stopped and looked at the house where the original conspiracy that finally, indirectly resulted in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, began. Yeah. It's just really, blows my mind. You look at, because some of that old, mid-19th century architecture still there. There's a bunch of other stuff that's, built newer, more modern buildings, but some of those, and that one is the Wok and Roll Chinese restaurant. But it is where the, what was her name? Surratt House, Mary Surratt, was it? Yeah. She was a Confederate sympathizer. She was a treasonist. And she supported the Confederate cause. And let out her house to boarders who hatched the conspiracy, including, and eventually, one John Wilkes Booth. She was executed. She was hanged on pretty flimsy evidence. The Supreme Court even said, "Don't hang her." And the United States military said, "Fuck you," and hanged her. It's one of those funny things about the Supreme Court. They only matter when people say they matter. It was only a few decades before that when the Supreme Court told Andrew Jackson that his Indian Removal Act was just unconstitutional. And he said, "Great. I'm going to do it anyway." And so he went about his genocidal business. Steve from Georgistan says, "I would have won, wired money or two, flew to D.C. and sprung you out." You know, the whole file in the cake kind of thing. Yeah, right. Back at the meth motel, I had a neighbor. Apparently a lot of people stay there on a long-term basis. This one particular fella had been there he was going to be there through the end of August. He was on a pipeline welding job. He was a welder. Had his own welding rig truck, big old 3500 series Dodge. And Monday evening when I pulled up there, he immediately engaged me in conversation. He was standing there in a pair of flannel pajama pants and a white T-shirt full of holes. Maybe it was from sparks from the welding. I don't know. And proceeded to, we got past the howdy, how you, pretty good. And I could tell pretty quick that I was dealing with somebody from down Louisiana way, because he made some of my friends in South Alabama sound like George Bernard Shaw. His accent was so thick. And he told me about welding on the pipeline job and how in August he could go back home, and he sure was looking forward to it. And that was about as good as the conversation got. Did I mention he was my next door neighbor? This wasn't one of those places where you go inside the hotel and you get on the elevator and somebody says, what floor, sir? And you say 15, and then you go down the... No. This was parking lot door room. And so he was my next door neighbor. And I figured out pretty quick that my next door neighbor, for all that he was a journeyman master welder and had about all the work he could stand to have, well, my next door journeyman master welder neighbor was suffering from an almost crippling chronic case of economic anxiety. Economic anxiety! Yeah. Because we weren't a minute and a half into the conversation when, unbidden and unsolicited, he began to explain to me his social theories. Didn't have to ask him who he voted for. Didn't even wonder. Because, you know, that word, the one with the R and the E and the I and the two G's and the N and the, and isn't ginger. He used that word an awful lot. And I was not at all comfortable. Did I mention he was my next-door neighbor? Did I mention that he had seen what vehicle I pulled up in? I was a chicken shit. Because I didn't grab him by the scruff of his holy T-shirt and say, "Now see here, my fine Confederate friend, I shall hear no more of that, and if you utter that word again, I shall be forced to call you out upon the field of honor." Didn't do that. I got away from him as quick as I could. I wish I could stand here and say that I had upbraided him, but you know what? I didn't. I wish I had. But I didn't. I didn't laugh. I didn't chuckle. You remember when, who was it? Was it Ben Sasse of Nebraska who chuckled along with Bill Maher when Bill Maher used that word, and then later on posted a tweet about how he should have objected more strenuously, but the problem wasn't the lack of objecting strenuously. The problem was the laughing and backpatting and going along, and yeah. At least I didn't do that. But Jesus, it was nasty. That's why I say obviously he had just a terrible case of economic anxiety. And being as how it went along with a Southwest Louisiana accent that made Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions the Turd sound like Walter freaking Cronkite. It was, shall we say, stereotypical. I kind of, when I walked past his truck, I'd kind of look around and see if I could see any Confederate flags or Sons of the Confederacy stickers, but there wasn't a damn thing. In other words, he was a smart one. He didn't let people see him coming. You'd just be standing there 1 minute, the next minute, you're getting a harangue about how at least the ones we got, at least the one we got down home, at least they know the police. We're a minority up here. And that was one of the things that grabbed me. He automatically assumed that my white skin made me a fellow traveler with him. And so he just launched into it. Now, the rental I was in had Illinois plates. I'd have figured him to figure me for a Yankee and maybe hold back a little bit. But he didn't. It was pretty obvious he was drinking. I figured probably rum and coke or some such. Maybe whiskey, you know, whiskey and coke, something like that. But just as easy going as you please. You know, not frothing it, not frothing at the mouth, not screaming, none of that. You know, up here, down there, home with the old place. Up here, oh, they own the place. Of course, they kill each other about three or four of them every night, which is good. That's a direct quote. And they weren't all one conversation. I still have my filthy nicotine habit. It's the last vice I've got. And so I'd walk out and stoke up a cigarette and the exalted Cyclops would get going. And I'd start walking. And if you've ever been, like, traveling and you're by yourself for a while, that urge to talk to somebody will get hold of you after a while. And I reckon he talked to everybody there. And let everybody know how he felt. Made me wonder what it was like to work with him on the job. I heard a little bit about that, too, during one of my smoking excursions. Yeah, remember, friends, this guy's welding on a pipeline. He can't do a goddamn thing to me. Long I do my job. You know, I did engage him at one point. You in the union? Shit, no. I don't need no union. I don't want no union. I ain't never going to pay nobody for the right to have me a job. I'm American. Fucking unions. You take your money. I sign on. I do my day's work. I get my day pay. And that welding inspector, he come up and he'd look at my weld. As long as he ain't got no problem with me, I can call him an asshole to his face. He can't do a goddamn thing. And I'm sitting here thinking, buddy, you don't know much about at-will employment now, do you? The people you meet. If I was going to wind up in D.C., some sort of D.C. area, hellhole jail, that would have been how it would have happened. But I got to tell you, I try to maintain a certain level of decorum and not go taking swings at people. You see, you got to understand, I was in Manassas, Virginia. And I could not for sure know that if he took a swing at me, well, I couldn't know that he wouldn't have a gun. But I also couldn't know that me defending myself, that he wouldn't have a colleague there in blue, if you will. Because racism runs deep in police forces. Take, for instance, Sergeant George Granius of the Chicago Police Department. It was back in 2014 when he stopped a woman, a medical assistant, by the name of Patassa Johnson. And he arrested her on suspicion of drunk driving. She denied that she was driving drunk. And the charges were eventually dropped. But at the time of the arrest, he handcuffed her in the back of his squad car, drove her to the local precinct, and then he dragged her into the building. And then while she was handcuffed inside the precinct, he went about the business of beating the living hell out of her. I don't suppose I have to mention the fact that Sergeant George Granius is white, and Patassa Johnson, black. No. Well, it turned out that when her lawyers got to investigating Sergeant Granius, they found out he was the owner of a couple of racist websites. Well, howdy do. He owned a website called NIGGA guns.com. He also owned a website called NIGGA down.com. Had a couple other websites, murdertech.com, deathcomescalling.com. Attorney Brandon Schiller said his hobby is apparently buying names of racist websites. And just in case you're wondering, here in July of 2017, Sergeant Granius still has a job. Yep. Not kidding. So, wow, it's 8 minutes past the hour. Thank you very kindly to Clarence. Clarence jumped in to help with the fundraising this evening. That takes us down to 180 to go. Thanks, Clarence. Much needed and much appreciated. At some point in time, I'll do some ciphering and figuring out how we can maybe just work slowly at getting things financially in order for the month. By the way, Clarence had a note earlier regarding Trump Jr. and collusion. He said, "Brother Bob, the word collusion used in this Trump shitfest will soon be replaced. The word will be replaced with conspiracy. The Trump family made a massive mistake chasing and winning the Oval Office. This business move only put the spotlight on the stupidity and total lack of business regimen. The Keystone cops have a better handle on chaos than this Klan. Donnie and son should have kept their New York and Moscow Goodfellow dealings in the dark. Moving Washington, D.C. into the picture was a tactical and strategic error on their part. It'll be very interesting to see the end result of this historic, monumental debacle. It will be. And it will be particularly gratifying if there is an end to it that doesn't wind up just being, you know, the re-election of Donald Trump in 2020, November. So, yeah. Thank you, Clarence. Thank you for getting us going. So let's get things, speaking of getting going, let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We'll take a little break. And jump right in. The conversation, I suspect, will be a dandy. Again, if you've never done it before, just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, Sparky Dunk, on Skype. And he'll get you hooked right up for it. And you'll be you'll be in the thick of things. All right. The stress line is engaged. So we'll take that break and see where it takes us. Dadgummit. I had a song all queued up. And it would have fit perfect. Let's see if it'll roll. Daggone it. This kind of pisses me off. Let's try this a different way. All right. Maybe now it'll work. Confounded. All right, we'll try it this way. You know, you've got all these plans, and then they don't come to nothing. Sorry about the dead air. We'll get there in a minute. used to be so easy. Oh, for a production staff. Maybe now. There we go. All right. Fired up, Sparky.
I'm a white man living in a white man's world. Under our roof is a baby girl. I thought this world could be hers one day. But her mama knew better. I'm a white man living in a white man's town. Wanna take a shot of cocaine and burn it down. Mama wants to change that Nashville sound. But they're never gonna let her. There's no such thing as someone else's war. Your creature comforts are the only things worth fighting for. Still breathing, it's not too late. We're all carrying one red bird, sharing one faith. I'm a white man living on a white man's street. I got the bones of the red man under my feet. Upstairs must have took a vacation. I still have faith, but I don't know why. Maybe it's the fire in my little girl's eyes. Maybe it's the fire in my little girl's eyes.
See why I wanted to get that queued up so badly? Yeah. Perfect. Jason, from the new album, The Nashville Sound, Jason Isbell in the 400 unit, White Man's World. Jason is a thinking, he's a thinking musician, no doubt about it. Let's run over to the Horn Skype chat room, carefully and capably moderated by Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
Seems like a week since we talked.
It was.
Oh, okay.
How come I'm hearing myself?
That I don't know.
Somebody else must have something on, because you're coming in good otherwise on Skype. The music's even better than it's been.
Well, I tweaked a little bit, so maybe things are improving.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did you happen to think of talking NASCAR to that guy?
No, I'm not going to say shocked. I was just kind of so thoroughly taken aback, I just wanted to get away.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
You asked him about having a union, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was, yeah.
Because
he wasn't in the middle of one of his monologues.
Oh, you couldn't fit an word in edgewise then? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, when he got going on that particular topic, there was it was filibuster.
Mm.
I mean, God. I mean, it was bad enough that one, I tweeted about it, and two, I called home. I called Agnes and said, help. Just listen to me for a minute. I said, I'm sharing a wall with this guy.
Did you hear him talking through the wall?
No, he was fairly quiet. I mean, no loud TV or anything, but whoa. He would just, and I got to where I'd kind of check out out the corner of my eye to see if he was out when I'd go out the door. Ugh. Oh, that sounds... Whoa, that was fun.
Whatever, that was John.
Oh, is that John in Central PA?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
He was...
Sorry, I just muted it.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. But, you know, all told, it was, you know, it's always an interesting 2 or 3 days when you go up there.
Another thing I wanted to ask you, did you see the interview with the president and the liquor supply officer?
I saw excerpts of it. I didn't sit down and watch the whole thing, no.
Well, I didn't watch the whole thing anyway. I saw the excerpt where Donnie said, windmill. You know me.
Yeah. You yelled, wind turbine, you asshole. But that's expecting a little bit too much of him to think that he would know the difference, right?
Yeah. I even Googled it to see, you know, there's only a couple windmills in each state around this country, and there's a lot of them are built back in the 1800s or come torn down or rebuilt as novelty items from the Netherlands.
Right, because, I mean, the word mill means something in windmill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mill grain.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's like, the Carpenters Union. We say the Carpenters Unions. But they're actually the Carpenters and Millwrights.
And Pile Drivers.
But, I mean, the official name is the Carpenters and Millwrights.
Yeah, but they also take in the Pile Drivers, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, nobody knows what a millwright is anymore.
Ooh, I do.
Okay. Go, man.
My father-in-law was a millwright. They build like conveyors and stuff, what they do is they set and adjust motors to belt drives and things like that, and they have precision instruments to set the the motors and all this other stuff, and that's what they do.
Yeah, that's what they do. But
precision machinery.
But the original meaning of the word.
Yeah, the original meaning was the guy working in the windmill.
Or a mill that was powered by water. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you've got all those gears and, you know, the shafts and the one turns and the other, and they all, and then eventually there's the two stones that grind the grain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy who made sure that everything was properly balanced and spinning right and the flageolet was properly connecting to the anistrand, well, that was your millwright.
That's what the millwrights of today still do, the same damn thing.
Right. So, then that, of course, always reminds me of the story that Rick Smith tells about the time the young woman saw him wearing his purple satin Teamsters jacket with the Teamsters logo on the back, you know, with the horses,
mm-hmm.
and walked up to him and said, "I love your jacket. Do you like work with racehorses or something? Do you work with horses?" Because they just
loved electricians when I got with the big IBW logo on the back there.
Oh, with the fist with the lightning bolts?
Yeah.
Are you a worshiper of Zeus? Yeah, because most people don't know what a Teamster was. A Teamster was somebody who managed a team of horses.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that he did, like, delivery stuff. You know, wagons. Do you work with horses? Well, I feel like I've been gone for a week.
You haven't been on the air for a week, but I don't know where you've been at for a week.
Yeah, I've been gone for a week.
You didn't leave last Saturday, did you?
No. I left Monday.
Oh, okay.
I left Monday.
All right. So you were home last weekend.
Yeah, I'm talking about a broadcast week. Because, you know.
So am I.
I don't broadcast on Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm. So you saw Bro-Fro Mix? By the way, what does that mean?
Let's see. I'm guessing that was Charlie.
I didn't mute. I muted him for him.
John Bro-Fro Mix refers to that's our shorthand for Rick Santorum. Way back when Santorum was equating gay people with people who had sex with dogs, he said, "You know, if we let these gay people get married, the next thing you know, we'll be having man-on-dog sex, and people will be able to marry their dogs." And of course, that was one of those refrains that ran all around the wingnutosphere. And Dan Savage got a contest going to create a new definition, or a definition of the word Santorum. And the winning definition was then they did something with Google that you can't do with Google anymore, I guess. But the definition of Santorum, let me get it here because I don't want to defeat it of its. And it really aggravated Rick Santorum when he ran for president. Because every time you Googled Santorum, this word would come up. And the winning response was, let me see here.
He used to be my senator.
Oh, yeah, he's nasty. I'm looking at the wiki on it, and I can't find the actual.
Well, Pat Toomey, I think, might be worse. I mean, he just won re-election, and, you know, he just said about the other day, oh, he's going to vote for that, you know, that shitty-ass, miserable disgusting health care bill. The bill that they want to replace, the Affordable Care Act with, only because the Kenyan Muslim usurper signed that into law, and they hate that.
Okay, so here it is. Here it is. The winning definition of Santorum was that frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the byproduct of anal sex. They did a Google bomb on it, and for eons after that, when you looked up Santorum, that was the first thing that hit. As a way of justly punishing Rick Santorum for his, filthy bigotry. Because what got that all going was when he said, we have laws in states like the one at the Supreme Court right now that has sodomy laws, and they're there for a purpose because, again, I would argue, they undermine the basic tenets of our society and the family, and if the Supreme Court says that you have the right to consensual sex within your home, then you have the right to bigamy, you have the right to polygamy, you have the right to incest, you have the right to adultery, you have the right to anything. Does that undermine the fabric of our society? I would argue, yes, it does.
Whenever I think of him, I think of him taking a dead fetus home and passing it around to his family like a joint. You know, it's hideous.
Well, I don't think they passed it around like a... Here! No. I mean, come on.
That deserves a cowbell.
But, yeah, they
did. Pick a hit.
Yeah, they did pass the fetus around like a game of hot potato at a kid's birthday party, and I'm sure the children have been scarred since. Yeah, here, this is your little dead baby brother. You know, and he fits in the palm of your hand. Really? L?
Yeah, I get half a cowbell, Bob.
Okay.
Some people do that. It's crazy. Oh. who slept with their dead kid, overnight and everything. It's kind of creepy. I guess that's not so creepy because it wasn't a fetus, but it died and everything. But I don't know if I'd like that, though. That'd be too sad. But I wanted to ask you: Is it as humid down in West Virginia as it is here in South Central Pennsylvania?
It's hot, but I couldn't get back here fast enough because what you're getting is what I got in D.C. and it was like walking through paper towels that have just been soaked in warm water.
Right. Oh, it's awful.
I mean, I posted that one picture on Facebook outside the National Academy of Sciences on Tuesday. I wore a suit. It was awful. It was terrible.
I bet you felt disgusting afterwards, sticky.
Oh, so the next day I just went with a pair of jeans and, a casual, those like Columbia fly fishing shirts with the open vented backs and stuff. Like, I went with one of those.
Yeah.
And I was still just, it was like glue. It was nasty. Yes.
So West Virginia isn't as humid as it. Oh, by the way, I got an aunt in Roanoke. Oh. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm going back to West Virginia. Really? You are? I got an aunt in Roanoke.
I was listening to some of the archives, because I listen to the podcast usually at work, and I had to listen to something. So I pulled up some of the show, the programs that you had leading up to the election before I discovered your program. And yeah, you mentioned that on the one, and it was really interesting though, because I started making some I got a notepad and started making notes about all the crazy shit that was going on during the election during the campaign season that everybody forgot about. Not to, change topic or anything. I just wanted to add this real quick. And, I still got a notebook out and started writing down all this crap. So, I can tell people when they say, oh, what's so bad about Trump? And I can just say this, 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 and that, like you were talking about, you were reading a article that from the Boston Globe, some woman or some reporter came out in the West Virginia and was interviewing some Trump supporters coming out of the polls for early voting, and one said that Hillary Clinton had 30,000 guillotines
if you want to get close, yeah.
And it's really bizarre stuff like that where it's just blatant lies, and the thing is,
looking back, I'm glad you brought that up, John, because looking back, we now know where that stuff was coming from, now, don't we?
The Russians.
Yeah.
And real quick, I wanted to tell you a funny story. It's not really funny, but we had our monthly meeting the other day for the Progressive PAC, and I pulled up. Everybody's on vacations. There was only a good half a dozen of us. So I pulled up behind a car that had all these pro-Trump stickers on it, you know, Hillary for prison, stuff like that. I mean, it was the back, like, hatch of this car had nothing but Trump, you know, pro-Trump stickers. So I thought, you know, I think we got ourselves a troll. So I went into the place that we meet, and like I said, about half a dozen of us, and but I quickly picked out who it was because it was the one person that, you know, I didn't recognize. So I said, I leaned over to the chairperson. I said, you know, that guy's a Trump supporter, just letting you know. Oh, no, he's not. No, he's not. I seen him around. No, he's not. Okay. So we went on with the meeting, and then later on he left, and he didn't say much. He didn't cause any problems, didn't say a whole lot. He said a couple of things that were sort of mocking, you know.
Yeah.
And but didn't really cause any problems. And so when he left, I said, everybody come here, and there's a big window there. And I said, look what car he's getting into. And he's getting into the car with the pro-Trump stuff. And and they're like, oh, you were right. And the one guy's like, oh, my God, he's going to kill us. But so, you know, they said, you know what? I don't care. We're not like the Democrats and Republicans. We want to be inclusive. We want to welcome anybody.
Oh, Jesus.
Here. Well, here it gets better. So it turns out he was taking pictures because we're running local candidates, and he was taking pictures of our board that we have all our strategy on, and all the documents that we have about what we're going to do, and pretty much the information on each person and stuff like that. He took pictures of that and posted it on a page from a group called Americans for Prosperity, which is a Koch brothers funded outfit. And yep. So it makes you kind of wonder, or it makes you realize how these Republicans are getting elected from dirty, rotten, filthy tricks like that. And during the meeting, see, we're working on what we're about to make, like a banner and stuff, and make everything official on a web page and all that. And one person said, we're going to put, we are not any affiliated with the Democratic Party. And I said, you know, that gives the GOP ammunition, right? You know that, right? And that guy was there when I said that, and he reiterated that in the post on the Americans for Prosperity page. He put, you know, they don't even want anything to do with the Democratic Party, which confirms that the Democratic Party is so toxic that even the liberals don't even like them. And he said, looks like we're going to be winning a lot of elections this season and next, and because these people are so fucking nuts about how their purity litmus tests, you know what I mean? Like these some of these so-called progressives that are so nuts about their purity litmus tests. And one woman, after he left, actually, this one woman said, I'm ready to watch the Democratic Party burn to the ground. And I said, now, whom do you think that's going to benefit? Now, I know I talked about this last week, but that was through an email. This is to their faces I said this. I said, whom do you think that's going to benefit? And then one guy said, well, usually – and he went to school for political science. He said, usually history shows that when a political party dies, another one sprouts up in its place that's politically aligned with its predecessor. I said, not with this Republican Party. I said, what's going to happen is if the Democratic Party ceases to exist tomorrow, they're going to absorb all those seats. And then we're going to have to endure a absolute GOP an absolute GOP government, and there's not going to be a goddamn thing we're going to do about it because they're already working on taking away people's voting rights.
Well, because, you know, there's only some people that, you know, really need to be voting. Let me just by way of an example, I've got a Mother Jones article in front of me here that Haley sent to me on Twitter. And it's from today by Tim Murphy. Here's the lead line. Fresh off a one-year stint in federal prison, disgraced former coal baron Don Blankenship just might run for Senate. In an interview with a West Virginia radio show on Wednesday, Blankenship said running as a Republican against Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, who is up for re-election next year, was a possibility.
So now you're going to vote for Joe Manchin?
Well, no. Back up. Remember, oh, there's some purity Dems, I mean justice Dems out there, who are all excited about a candidate who's primarying, says she is, Joe Manchin.
What's her name?
Her name is Paula Swearingen. I know her. I consider her a friend. I consider her candidacy a very, very ill-considered notion.
Oh, really?
Not because I'm not because I'm a big fan of Joe Manchin. I'm not. I will go.
Oh, I know.
I'll put my bona fides in Joe Manchin criticism up against anybody. But hey, wouldn't that be hilarious? By primarying Joe Manchin, you get him weakened enough that you could wind up with Senator Don Blankenship.
That would be a disaster.
Wouldn't that make the purity Democrats so happy? Or the purity, whatever they are, the ideologically pure left. Let's call them that.
Well, to couch that, Bob, Kid Rock is teasing a run for Michigan.
I know. I've heard.
And nothing surprises me anymore. I would not be surprised if the son of a bitch pulled it off. Because people are that dumbed down now.
Well, I had while I was in D.C., I had a lovely dinner with our dear friend Reverbo and his significant other. I don't necessarily have the clearance to use names, so I won't. But probably the thing that I said something at dinner that just horrified her, and it's something I've said on the air here. 2024, Ivanka Trump, our first woman president. Bet on it. You know, put a $5 bill on it right now. It'd probably come in at million-to-one odds. You'd have $5 million when she's elected. Just saying. But you know that idea. Oh, we want to be inclusive. God damn! What kind of simpletons are you dealing with, John? No offense, but really. Because you know, Republicans vote Republican. Democrats will go out and vote for Jill Stein or, a Daisy or, occasionally they'll vote for their party's nominee so as to keep the other party from taking power. But, you know, not this time. But Republicans vote for Republicans. All that never Trump bullshit that was promulgated during the election cycle. Guess who they voted for? Yeah, that's right, Donald Trump. Hey, let me run over to the stress line. I want to make sure that Scott gets in on the conversation. Are you there, Scott?
Yeah, hi, Bob. Is that me?
That's you.
Okay, sorry. I was having a handful of Chex Mix.
Well, sounds tasty.
Yeah, and I was waiting for Punky to fly over to my shoulder because he likes Chex Mix for some reason.
I had no idea. It's probably the salt.
But
maybe he's got a taste for Worcestershire.
Maybe that's it, because those little bagel chips they must be soaked or baked in that stuff. But anyway, can you hear me okay? Because I'm on this.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Phone line. Okay, I didn't try the Skype connection because I hadn't, with you being gone and me being up to my ass and boxes moving over this past weekend.
So the move did happen.
Pardon me?
The move did happen.
Oh, yeah, I moved. I finished everything, I guess, Monday night. It was done in stages. I couldn't afford another truck, and I rounded up some people. with vehicles who could help. And, you know, it took a couple of days, but we got it done. And Punky is settled in. Chirps the cat is settled in. I'm wrestling with boxes. I don't know. I've got stuff here. I have no idea what's in which box because I didn't label them properly. And but at least now that I'm here, I can, you know, I've got plenty of time to sort through and get stuff put where it should be. And my one of my landlord's friends is moving to from here to New York State, and she's giving away some furniture. She was just going to donate it to, like, Goodwill or something, but I get first dibs. So moving from a studio to a one-bedroom, you know, the furniture that I had doesn't stretch quite as far with all this space. But anyway, I'm very happy and blessed that it worked out properly, and next month I'll be able to actually subscribe, as I said that I would do, and that will take at least that extent of the burden, you know, off of keeping the horn up and running from month to month.
And what Punky said, no doubt about it. Well, I'm glad to know you got the move in, and glad to know you got the help you needed. So, from here on, so now you can work on the home decor.
Well, yeah, we'll see how that works. Nothing matches currently. Maybe with this hand-me-down furniture, I'll actually have two things that are actually meant to go together.
Well, what you need is a good rug to pull the whole room together.
Well, the nice thing about there's a number of nice things about this new apartment. But the other place was carpeted. Any place they could put carpet, they put it. Well, this place is all hardwood floors and recently done hardwood floors.
Well, that's kind of like my motel this week at Motel Meth. Their motto is "We'll leave the Bunsen burner on for you." It didn't have carpet. It had wood look linoleum on the floors, and I suspect that's probably because it's easier to get the blood up.
Yeah, you got to watch out for some of that linoleum in those old motels. But I wish you could see this place. I've got two big old palm trees in the front yard. No, three big old palm trees in the front yard. And I think there's one out back. I've got a front door and a side door. Nice size kitchen. Fairly good size bedroom. A bathtub. I haven't had a freaking bathtub since Reagan was in office.
You'll be lounging in the tub now.
Oh, I did a Calgon Take Me Away the other night.
Punky, fly me a cigar over here.
Huh?
Punky, you'll have Punky flying your cigars into the bathtub.
Well, he's welcome. He's welcome to splash around if he wants, you know. But I was in that tub at least an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes. And my fingers and toes were so pruny that the guy from Sunsweet called and made a bid on the pruny-like toes and fingers for the new crop.
Okay, so just a general warning. You know, people do have dinner during the program sometimes, and right.
Yeah, you're giving the definition of Santorum, and you're getting on me for pruning.
Right, because I already took us into the gutter, and I mean, right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but anyway. No, go ahead.
No, you.
Well, since we last talked, at least on Friday on the front porch, I was had gotten the move underway last Friday, so I wasn't able to tune in or call in. But we kind of exchanged a couple of emails about the issue with Skype on the front porch. Is there any new word from Sparky on getting that resolved? Because for some reason everybody else can get in, but it's like I have ceased to exist.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. So I know that when I came home and fired up Skype again, I'd gotten another damn Skype update. So who knows what?
No, doing. I thought maybe there was some troubleshooting or something that you could recommend, because after the show 2 weeks ago on Friday, I got in one of the post-show chats on Skype and was comparing notes with some of the folks that were in on that. And nobody seems to have this issue. So, and then they really couldn't come up with troubleshooting. So I thought maybe you would know of something to do in the meantime.
No, I'm clueless. I'm just one more person on. I got nothing.
Okay. Well, I thought, you know, because you've used it way longer than I have. But it's just out of the blue. It's like I put the request into the added, and it's like I'm invisible or something. So,
we'll see.
Maybe somebody knows and can sort it out.
But I mean, you're doing fine. You're doing fine here. I mean, I've got good audio coming from you, and so yeah, maybe let's not tempt the radio gods.
Maybe
because the gizmo line has been working. The stress line, the gizmo box, has been working surprisingly well for a surprisingly large number of people for the first time in ages, and I don't want any universal forces out there looking down. Oh no, screw that.
No, definitely not. But in newsy bits, I was kind of out of the loop. It was blissful in a way. What with busy being moved, getting moved and packed and unpacked and everything. But I had followed the newsy bits, and I forget whether it was on Vice News on HBO or whether it was on the PBS NewsHour, but there were stirrings, even in your home state of West Virginia and places like Kentucky and other places, where there's a little bit of mumbling and rumbling. Not up to the level of it being a war, but there's definite talk amongst Trump supporters who are really down on this Trump care nonsense, and also the GOP Senate, whose court the ball is now in. And these are actual people who voted for Trump who are highly dissatisfied given the lack of progress in the area of this health care bill. So, again, I'm the relentless optimist, but knowing D.C. and knowing politics, as a lifelong interest ever since being a child in the D.C. area, the thing to always keep in the front of mind is they run for office to get elected, and then they run every 2, 4, or 6 years to stay in office. And if the people are not happy with them, changes will occur. So maybe that will be our saving grace. Maybe that will be the self-correcting mechanism that will kick in at some point when people realize what's up.
Well, the place to watch, Scott, is Kentucky. Because Matt Bevin down there is about to try to raise seven shades of unholy mayhem with his state's Medicaid program, and he's been successful so far. So just kind of watch and see. I think I heard somebody try to chime in from the Skype group. Steve, was that you?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I was just, I'm just sitting here listening.
Okay, because I had an email from you a minute ago.
Oh, did you? What did it say? I've been working all day, so I don't remember much.
It's a hoax.
You were talking about the Russia thing. It's a hoax.
Yeah, deep state.
Deep state. You know, I have to tell you, when I saw that article, I mean, I've been... and this is going to be lawyer speak. My standard of belief was of a civil case for this,
I thought it was more likely than not that it happened. But when I read the article last week from Doofus, or excuse me, Doofus Jr., I read that and that one paragraph in the Times where it says that he went to this meeting hoping to get information, I thought to myself, so, you know, how do so
well, my favorite part, Steve, was the defense. Well, we went looking for evidence with which we could collude with the Russians, but they didn't have any, and they just wanted to talk about adoption. So, no big deal. Right. We would have colluded if we could have colluded, but we couldn't collude, so we didn't collude.
Right, and of course that's exactly the scenario that happens all the time when a law enforcement department has a sting operation and they set it up to buy cocaine, and the person goes there and they go there with the intent of buying cocaine, but they don't buy any, and then they just let people go. That's just how it works.
Yeah, well, or you know, the FBI sets up a sting operation with some poor black kids in Miami and says,
in Miami, right?
Yeah, hey, you know, it'd be a great idea if look, if we got you guys some new tennis shoes and a couple of basketballs and some high explosives, would you blow up the Sears Tower? And they go, dude, sure. And then sure. They just let them go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Cause see, that's an actual story that happened.
Oh, I know. I remember it. I have to say something about this group out there, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was on the line here who mentioned the group he's a part of when you let the Trumpanzee in there about being inclusive. I mean, Bob, do we need another example of again how they want it more than we do? I mean, can you imagine?
Well, wait. You know, I was thinking of it because you've mentioned that phrase, you've mentioned that concept before, Steve. And I agree with it, but I think we might be linguistically mischaracterizing it. It's not that they want it more than we do. I think there's a nuance of meaning in when we say, we don't want it enough. We don't, because they want it more than we do means that maybe both sides really want it, but the other side really, really, really wants it.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
That's not the case. They really, really, really want it, and we don't want it more than we want to holler about you corrupt DNC, but her emails, Jill could have won, Bernie would have won, except the DNC had its thumb on the scales. That's what a significant portion of we want. And by we, I mean progressives.
Mm-hmm.
By the time people on our side want it that bad, it's going to be too late because voter suppression. They're working on that right now. I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but you saw the reports about this election integrity commission, how they're asking for everybody's information just because of this delusion that this fucking orange monster has, that he's so uptight and insecure that he created the Spyro Keats created this illusion, or delusion, I should say, that he actually won the popular vote because of illegal voters, which is, you know, that is completely non-existent. Voter fraud is practically non-existent, as we all know. And by the time they're going to get on top of this, and these people, how are we going to know whether or not they're lying? What happens if they come up with conclude their commission by saying, yep, 3 million people voted illegally? What then? How are you supposed to know whether they're lying? Well, we'll know they're lying, but you know, the average Joe is going to say, oh, it looks like, you know, he would have won the popular vote, and the next thing you know, everybody's going to be all right with these voter suppression laws.
Right, and with this data collection. Let's understand one thing really clearly. My Secretary of State, who is now a Republican, by the way, and a Trumpanzee, said, well, you know, we went ahead and gave them the information that was publicly available. You know, we couldn't stop them. It's publicly available. And my response to that is, fuck you. They want it, and it's publicly available. Let them go and get it.
Yeah, it's access, it's accessible to everybody.
Don't
everybody
hand it to them. Don't be an accessory to a coming crime, for Christ's sakes. But that was apparently a very difficult concept to get for my Republican Trumpansy Secretary of State.
Yep. And it's basically it's another component of the neo-fascism. I mean, that's what this is. I try to tell every progressive that I know personally, this is fascism. And one guy looked at me the one day at one of our meetings and said, you know, I wish you'd stop saying that because it's not true. Because these people, some of these people, they just don't get it, Bob. They don't understand politics in this country right now. They don't get it. To be fair, they worry about policy, and that's what they want to focus on, which I commend them for that. Don't get me wrong. I really do. But they got to look at the other side and say, we got to start doing some of this. I don't care. I say we start doing some of the tactics that they're
doing. I love policy. I love policy. But you know what? You know what the funny thing about policy is? You can have the most awesome policy positions in the world, but if you don't have power, your policy positions are parlor games.
Haven't we had this exact conversation many, many times recently?
Well, I think
but it's true. It's absolutely right.
It damned well bears repeating. I mean,
politics is amoral, and it needs to be fought in an amoral way. I think what all Democrats and progressives need to do is we need to pick up Sun Tzu's Art of War and start employing those tactics.
It is a full contact sport. You are correct. And we're playing it like it's a flag football.
We're transmitting our policy morals into politics. And politics is amoral.
Well, I continue to say I will put my progressive bona fides up against anybody. And I am probably more left than maybe 99% of the people in this community.
You're more left than I am.
But that being the case, I also recognize that it doesn't matter how left I am unless we have power. And, you know, there are states with significant progressive populations. West Virginia isn't one of them. And we've still got people in the progressive community in this state who look at the primary and say, but look, Bernie stomped her. There's lots of us. And it's like they weren't even listening. When Trump came to West Virginia, he told, you can look the story up, he told the Trumpansies, oh, you don't even need to vote in the primary. It's not even important. I've already got the nomination. You know what? You want to vote in the primary? Go vote for Bernie. And guess what? They did. And there's a whole bunch of that Bernie vote in West Virginia, that overwhelming Bernie vote, that was Trumpansies, who, even if Bernie had been the nominee, would never in a million goddamn years have voted for him in the general election. Because they were already made up, they'd already made up their minds. They were going to make America great again, because Trump loves coal. And that Bernie, he's a goddamn tree hugger. And bless their little hearts, apparently they can't figure that out.
Yeah, and let me ask a question. I've been thinking a lot about this. I don't ask this question. In 99 times out of 100, or I would say 100 times out of 100, each of us had our mother or father or grandmother or grandfather say to us, nothing's perfect. You can't always have everything you want. So why is it that some people think politics is that one thing where they deserve everything they want?
You know, that's a really good, I mean, that's not funny, but that's a cowbell question. Why does politics get a different standard? And I don't know that I've got an answer.
I mean, it
You know, once in a while I have, you know, I have the urethra I have found it moment.
That gets a cowbell.
I've used that before. But I actually, I got that off of Married with Children. But I had that moment, and I confess, I have been that way in the past. I thought, you know, I was at a time where I was never going to vote for Hillary. That I was like, I don't care. I can't vote for her. I'd never voted for a Clinton in the past. I wasn't going to vote for her. And I remember the point at which I said I would vote for her if she were the nominee was when Bob told the story about losing health care. And I thought, you know, I can't in good conscience take health care away from people, away from anybody. Whether that person's a right-wing Republican or a left-wing whatever. And that's when I made that decision. And the more I've thought about it, the more I've thought, you know what? Politics, as with anything, you can't get everything you want. But you have a choice between somebody who will not listen to you and you won't change their mind, and you have somebody who will listen to you and you might change their mind. So, I mean, when you look at it that way, and you look at it like the what we talked about, the difference between politics and policy, it's a no-brainer. I mean, let's face facts. As imperfect as the ACA is, I don't think anybody would, with a brain, doubts that it didn't make the system at least marginally better. And now we're on the brink of going back to something, not going back, but it's going to be worse than it was. And whatever I say about Hillary, I know for a fact that wouldn't have happened if she'd be if she were president.
Right.
Period.
And they could have passed. And look, let's not kid ourselves, Steve. They would have spent 4, 8 years, whatever, passing, just like they did under the Kenyan Muslim usurper, passing Obamacare repeal acts, and she would have just kept vetoing them. Veto, mm-hmm. Veto, 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 veto. And that would have look at the energy that's being wasted on this, and look at the resources that are being consumed. I mean, it costs money to bring people to D.C. to protest, to, you know, leave my health care alone, that kind of stuff. It takes capacity. It takes energies to get out there and fight to keep what should not be taken away. And, you know, any force that is constantly engaged will eventually become exhausted. And that's part of it, too. So, you know, I think we have to at least pay attention to that fact. And by the way, I figured if anybody, I got a giggle out of you when I told Scott that he needed to get a rug for his new apartment.
Oh, I did giggle because what I was going to say is it sounds like Scott is still a Lebowski virgin.
Scott, are you still a Lebowski virgin? No, Scott's not on the line anymore.
Yeah, when you said tied the room together and he kind of just talked over it, I thought.
Still hasn't watched.
Still hasn't been baptized.
Well, you know, behold, I stand at the door and knock. even if I'm a nihilist. But right. I did. I've got a new thing I do because I drove past the White House 4 times, and every time I go by, you know what I say? Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie. You're out of your element.
Well, Bob.
Yeah, Steve. Oh, by the way, and Steve, I need you to scratch Miss Cletus behind the ear. Right there where she likes it so much, because she went out and dug up some bones. So now between Cletus and Frank and Clarence, we it would be great that we're $60 along, and it would be great to raise $140 this evening and finish off and start taking a little bite out of what got spent this week on, you know, Appalachia's, you guys spent on Appalachia's behalf. And again, my thanks go out to everybody who helped in that effort. Thank you so, so much. Billable Rick has been shockingly quiet this evening.
Oh, Bob, how are you?
I'm good. I gotta talk to you about something.
Okay.
A little bird told me.
Uh-huh.
That you called into the Norman Goldman show.
Oh, absolutely. I call into a lot of shows.
He does. I hear him on Randy all the time.
I hear him on Randy all the time.
And that you used the word twooping.
Yes, I did. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that gimmick infringement?
It's not gimmick infringement, but, you know, a little plug for the program would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I tried to. Probably should.
I'm kidding. But you know, people.
No, that's okay.
You have your own level of celebrity. People recognize you now when you know, they write me and they say, "Hey, Billable Rick just used twooping." Of course, twooping isn't mine. Twooping comes from the Rogue Melania account on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Whoever's writing Rogue Melania is really comically good.
I'll have to check that out. Now, have they held hands in public recently at all or not? I've not seen that.
I don't know, but there was a bit of an international scandal in regard to the pussy grabber and the First Lady of France.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard about that. Like, he was, you know... He almost assaulted her.
He grabbed her by her arms and said, "Oh, you're looking very fit."
Jeez. What a weird guy.
He's a pig rather than just being weird.
And by the way, Rogue Melania on Twitter is at Rogue First Lady.
Oh, there you go. At Rogue First Lady. I'll have to check that out.
I just wanted to say real quick, I need to step off. Got to head home here shortly, but I just want to say hi and check in for a little bit. But I'll be listening offline. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Take care, Steve.
All right, see you, Steve. Care. Be good now.
Thanks, Steve.
Sure enough.
So, anyway, you know what I was thinking about? I mean, all this Russian stuff, all these meetings and these skeevy people that are meeting with Trump Jr. on June 9th of last year, and they're basically trying to get Congress to overturn the Magnitsky Act, which basically was passed to, as a sanction against human rights abuses of that lawyer who was killed in custody. I mean, you have these, the Russian lawyer was trying to get that overturned, and then there was a lobbyist and so forth. I mean, regardless of whether what was done was legal or not, I believe it was illegal. But I mean, it's just fucking downright evil, these people. That's the word that comes to mind. Evil. Forget about lawfulness or not, but it's these people are just evil people. You know, everybody concerned, the Trumps and the Russians. I mean, you know, birds of a feather flock together. I'm sorry, you know.
Well, Rick, when this first broke, first thing I did was texted Bob. Do you remember Bob? I said, "Bob, did you been keeping up with the current events?" And you texted back to me, and you were like, "It's nothing going to come out of it, you know." And every day it kept building and building and building. But looking back, I'm not so sure that you wasn't originally onto something, that they are just pushing this story on us to distract us from the fact that Mitch Chinless is trying to push this Trump care bill through by hook or crook.
Well, I mean, consider this. Okay, so I don't know how any of this stuff is going to get any traction when the entire Republican Party is okay with it. It's not just that they overlook it. They're okay with it. They are okay with it, all right? And secondly, then there's our side, courtesy of Democracy Now. Headline, Glenn Greenwald, Donald Trump Jr.'s emails aren't a smoking gun or evidence of criminal collusion.
I get so tired of hearing that fuckface on Democracy Now. I don't know why they keep having him on, you know?
Because he is beloved of the purity left.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's one reason I don't listen to Democracy Now much, but he was on Amy's show yesterday discussing the conviction of former President Lula, who's trying to get back into power, apparently, in 2018. But the guy just makes me cringe, you know? I mean, especially knowing what a, you know, how orgasmic he is with regards to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and that whole crowd, you know? And I really blame them for Trump being elected, them and the Russians, and Trump and his dirty tricks, you know? That's really the only way Republicans can win, you know? I mean, Nixon had dirty tricks. Reagan had dirty tricks to get in. We had G.W. Bush got in with the Willie Horton ad, and, you know, George W. got in, you know, by the Brooks Brothers revolt at the, you know, Palm Beach County precinct where they were counting the ballots. I mean, these guys can't, you know, and then winning 5-4 in the Supreme Court. I mean, these guys, you know, they don't have any, you know, they're good at getting elected if they rig the game. But once they're in, they can't do a goddamn thing except, you know, steal from the Treasury and try to, you know, fatten their beds, you know?
Even Katrina Vandenhoevel disappointed me Sunday on Stephanopoulos, saying that, oh, if we build bridges with Russia, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And it's
really?
Like, yeah, yeah. Huh? And it's like,
is there no
shiny keys, you know?
They fucking attacked us. If this had happened during the Kennedy administration or during the Eisenhower administration, we would have probably started a war against these guys. It would have been a war.
Rick, let's just flip the script a minute. Let's say that Chelsea would have met with a Russian operative. They'd be running around with their fucking hair on fire, man.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, the disappointing thing is that, you know, they might end up getting pardoned, okay, everybody concerned. But that doesn't, you know, if they do get pardoned, then at least they can be compelled to testify about what really happened, you know. And if they don't tell the truth, then they can be, you know, charged again and again pardoned. But eventually, you know, the truth will have to come out, I think, you know? I mean, I think we have enough puzzle pieces that have been put together.
Oh, every day. There's something else, you know, every day. Yeah. Something else falling down the hill.
But as long as you've got fifth columnists like Glenn Greenwald out there telling people that there's nothing there.
Yeah. Well,
or treason. Oh my God, that's a stretch. You can't even go there yet. Bullshit.
I mean,
is this treason?
You know,
what the fuck is, man?
Well, again, the word treason, it might be more like espionage, Steve. I mean, I see, you know, as Randy Rhodes has said, I think this is just one big money laundering and RICO conspiracy myself, involving Trump and all of the, you know, oligarchs and what have you, and, you know, all of those dirty real estate dealings in New York City by the Russian oligarchs and you know, Trump laundering their money in his projects and so forth, and then dismissing that lawsuit against the civil forfeiture action against Prevazon shortly after Preet Bharara was fired and two or three days before it was to go to trial, you know. So, yeah, I mean, is it treason? I mean, technically, I think you have to be at war. I suppose maybe we are at war with Russia because they sort of invaded the, you know, the U.S. on a cyber basis.
Maybe I'm just being hyperbolic, and I don't mean to be.
Yeah.
It upsets me. And Who is the guy that's independently investigating this?
Bob Mueller. Bob Mueller. I think he's a straight shooter myself.
I do too, but Trump has the authorization to fire him.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, Steve.
The deck is stacked against us, you know?
Well, no, I don't think it is. I think, you know, they're feeling the pressure. They're feeling the heat. Everybody's lawyered up.
They're down.
They have no message. They can't get anything done other than try to, you know, do damage control. And the more they try to control the damage, the more damage they cause because they're amateurs.
Did you see Kellyanne Conway on the TV flashing cue cards like from a Bob Dylan video?
Yeah. That,
freaking hilarious, man. It's not illusion. You know, did you see that? Is that the best they got?
I don't know if I saw that, Steve.
I'll see if I can find a video of it. I mean, she was really trying to play to the lowest common denominator. Did you see it, Bob?
No, I did not.
Was she on Fox? Was she on Fox, Steve?
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's the place she'll go.
Yeah, you know, exactly. She's banned from CNN. The only news I watch really is CNN. I find that they're very good at the breaking news and, you know, even though they try to do the bullshit balance by having people like, you know, Brofro mix or whatever the hell you want to call them, Santorum, Santorini, what do you call that? What's that religion involving the sacrifice of dead chickens?
Santeria.
All of that. Santa Maria. Yeah. Senator Santa Maria. you know, they do try to create phony balance by having like opposing viewpoints. But I think they've gotten to the point where, you know, Trump has lied so much and the Trump aides have lied so much that, you know, they're really not welcome on there. You know,
I just posted a link in the chat room and in the Skype room. Check it out at your leisure.
OK,
I mean, this is what we have sunk to, you know.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. I mean. You know, but to answer your question, if Trump, or to make a further comment, rather, I think if Trump does fire Bob Mueller, I think he's going to get impeached. I think he's been told by the Republican leadership that, look, you know, you got
really,
you know,
do yes, they have the balls yes. to do that? Really?
Yes. I think he's been told by Republican leaders that, look, if you do this, you're out of here because, you know, firing Comey was bad enough. And now, now he's really under a microscope any further things he does, because clearly firing Comey, I mean, he admitted to Lester Holt that he fired Comey to relieve the pressure on the Russia thing,
right,
and told that information to Kislyak and Lavrov the next day in the private meeting at the in the Oval Office. So the guy has clearly admitted to obstruction of justice. So if he does anything further that's that big, like getting rid of Bob Mueller, I think he's gone. I think he will be impeached just because the Republicans.
I sure would like to have some actual evidence that Republicans give a damn about any of this before I buy into your. I mean, I appreciate your optimism, Rick, but I'd like to have some evidence.
I do too, but I just don't see it. I mean. To me, as long as they got some stooge that's willing to sign any asinine legislation for tax cuts or to get rid of Obamacare, for lack of a better word, they're all for it, and they're going to keep him there as long as they possibly can to get through their hateful agenda.
But not just that.
Remember who elects Republicans? Other Republicans.
Right.
Low information.
Right.
Just like the guy that was your neighbor, Bob. How'd you like hanging out with one of my Maryland peeps, man?
Yeah.
No, he was Louisiana, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, believe it or not, Maryland's a melting pot, and you have some very progressive intellectual people there, but you also have his ilk as well.
Yeah.
But what I was saying is, remember who elects Republicans? Other Republicans. So far, the most that you're getting from any Republican is hand-wringing and pearl-clutching.
Huh? That's true.
And consequently, so far that appears to be enough. Now you've got Republican columnists out there like Jennifer Rubin, who said in the Washington Post, the problem is not Donald Jr., the problem is the rot in the conservative party. And that's true. But there is not a shred of evidence, Rick. Not a shred. Not a scintilla juris that they're willing to do anything about it. And that means that nothing that has come so far has even approached a threshold of constitutional offensiveness to the people who have the power to determine whether or not anything will be done. 81% of Republicans surveyed, I think I heard, are completely okay with all of this with Trump. Now that's the same
Trump supporters.
No, I think it's Republicans.
Really? Okay, I heard a similar stat, but it only applied to Trump supporters, which made sense.
Now this is the same 81% that spent the last 6 years or so hollering, "But her emails, crooked Hillary."
And how about Chinless Mitch? Well, it's not a late threat, but about a week ago, he said, if we can't get this repeal Trump Act, then we're going to have to reach across the aisle and, God forbid, work with the Democrats to shore up the ACU.
Well,
was that a threat? Do you think that was a threat? Or I mean, how did that strike you?
Well, I think he's going to have to, you know, if they can't, you know, the problem, Steve, is they were like belly aching for the last 7 or 8 years about Obamacare, and they, you know, the repeal and the replace thing, they voted on it like, I don't know how many times, I forgot, you know, probably
more times than I, you know, in the 70s, I believe.
I mean, they probably did it more times than I've ever masturbated in my life. I mean, in terms of, like, they were doing it all the time, man.
Yeah, well, one-handed, you know? Right?
Yeah. But, you know, so they have to show something. And because of, you know, because the chinless Mitch's latest plan doesn't do anything to address the cuts in Medicare, you know, all he does is throw some money at the opioid crisis. I don't think that's going to be enough for the, you know, for the Republican senators in some of those states like Ohio and possibly even West Virginia and, you know, Nevada and Susan Collins of Maine, you know, those sorts of folks, the so-called moderates that really aren't that moderate, but, you know, they don't want to be blamed for throwing people off the insurance rolls. And yeah, I think what's going to happen, Steve, is because of the focus of Trump on his own internal problems, he hasn't been able to try to build any support for any kind of these agenda items. So the Republicans, I guess, could use, let's say, a firing of Bob Mueller as a reason to, like, get rid of Trump, only because he's too distracted and too wounded to get any to help them get anything done, because they need to get this health care problem solved, in their opinion, so that they could then, you know, use the, that then give their buddies, you know, their rich folks, the rich supporters, a huge tax cut. So, I mean, that may be.
Well, a tax cut on top of a tax cut, because.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. You know,
exactly.
There's no reform to this, to the healthcare disaster, what they're creating. It's just a tax cut.
Right.
And it's mean. It's just mean what they're doing to people.
Well,
and they're
mean.
Gonna take away. Yeah. I mean, when we get old and we're destitute, you have to be destitute to get into a nursing home. That you have to physically make yourself destitute. And they're trying to do, what were they going to do with old folks? Just put them out in the street?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. If they had their way, Steve. If they had their way, they would do that.
And
you know?
This is supposed to be the...
They would basically throw grandma from the train.
This
you know?
Is supposed to be the quote-unquote Christian party. There's nothing Christian about that.
No, that's just their.
And that's why I
that's
denounce
just their
religion.
Schtick. That's their schtick. Like like prayer meeting Wednesdays. You know the, you know the dude the you know the Hillsong Church. You know the, you know, the song that Bob plays every night, every Wednesday night. You know, those folks just use that as a ruse to trick the rooms to vote for them, basically.
And it's all tax-free.
Yeah, that's right.
Hallelujah.
Praise the dollar. Does anyone have time for a little bit of frivolity? I've got some concerts I'll be going to.
Well, stand by. I want to share a couple of thoughts. I just had a note going back to the point that Steve in New York raised a few minutes ago. James says, to Steve's point, in 20 years, Americans may finally come around to seeing the reason to institute single payer. But we will still have another 20 years of right-wing dominance on the Supreme Court. And, of course, the big question then follows, gee, I wonder why we're going to have another 20 years of right-wing dominance on the Supreme Court. Oh, wait. Ah, because we failed the national one-question IQ test. Damn it.
It shouldn't be that hard to pass that test, you know?
Well, it was too much for this country.
Yeah, no shit.
I mean, France had... See, that's the interesting thing. France had a one-question IQ test and passed it with flying colors.
With no problem, like 60-40.
and they had a similar degree of right-wing media, Russian media meddling in their electoral process.
Right.
And the French people were, A, smarter than us, and, B, the French government dealt with it appropriately. Because, see, a lot of people, and I think we need to maybe work through this at some point, a lot of people seem to think that when we say Russian meddling in the election, that people are saying that the Russians changed votes. No, it was far more subtle than that. Do you realize that what happened in 2016 can be attributed almost entirely to the rise of social media?
They changed thought processes, Bob.
But it can be attributed almost entirely to social media.
Yeah.
Imagine the Russians of any era trying to manipulate an American election without a Facebook, without a Twitter. Primarily Facebook.
And every idiot that went on Facebook and took these in my smarter than a third grader test, that's who they knew who to target. Psychological profile.
Well, that's an interesting theory. I was not. But I mean,
that's why I don't take those tests, Steve.
No, I don't either. I avoid all that crap like the plague, man.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a rab Latiner experiment. Screw that.
No kidding.
But as a progressive, I would really love to see Chinless Mitch have to reach across the aisle and work with Democrats to shore up the Affordable Care Act. And I think that was more of a threat than it was, you know, something that we're going to have to do. Because, my God, then, you know, the Kenyan Slurpee's law is going to live on, and we helped it. We shored it up. And that's terrifying to these bastards.
Yeah, I think so. But the question is, how do you, you know, you are at the tender mercies of the willingness of a communications media behemoth like Facebook to actually cooperate and try to prevent this shit from happening. And if you try to compel it somehow, you're going to run up against the First Amendment before you can say boo. Because the First Amendment will be used to protect a corporation. It will be used to provide a life support system for the religion industry.
Corporations are people, my friend.
And
human beings.
And don't forget, there's now a right to publish false news. That was established in a case down in Florida years ago with, I think, Monsanto. You know, I guess an anchor there had you know, refused to air a story about, you know,
Hillary, wasn't it?
No, I think it had to do with a pesticide.
Florida?
Yeah,
Are you sure it wasn't Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
No, it wasn't her.
I'll bet it was. You just don't know. She just had her thumb on the scale.
There you go. Yeah. it probably was her. Anyway,
that stuff just drives me crazy because who do people think the Democratic Party, DNC, expected to be the nominee in, say, 2014 when this stuff was gearing up? Why did they think Debbie Wasserman Schultz was, you know, chair of the DNC?
Right.
Well, who do we have in the next go-round, Bob? That's frightening. You've thrown Hillary out there. I'm like, my God, please. Don't even say it.
She hasn't said she won't. She didn't give the Nixonian "you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore" speech. Now, did she?
That's, you know what the definition of insanity is, and that nails it down. I mean,
still her turn.
We've got to find somebody, another Barack Obama, somebody, and they may be waiting in the wings. I was kind of hoping.
Well, but by the same token, we've also got 18 to deal with before we ever deal with 20.
Right.
I mean, it's interesting to ponder 2020, but 2018 is, well, that's gonna tell us a lot about 2020. If we get our asses handed to us again in 2018, we could run Jesus H. Christ, and it will not matter.
Against a pile of dirty rags, and the dirty rags would win.
And see, that's part of my. That's part of my feeling about this. We are in the middle of watching. We are in the middle of system failure.
Well, it's a constitutional crisis, like you said 6 months ago. You know?
But it's hard to make failing systems stop failing. I mean, if you've got a computer that's crashing every day, it's hard to make it stop crashing every day. And even if you make it stop crashing every other day, you consider it a win when you get it to only crash every other day. It's not going to be okay. And we're not okay. This system is not okay.
Well,
and it is my considered opinion that we are progressing toward a crossroads, a tipping point. We'll see a sort of peak, and shit will really start falling apart after that. I mean, we've got to, and you know, it happens by degrees. It happens a little bit at a time. It was years ago now when they shut the government down. And I said, we have got to recognize that the Republican Party is not just our well-meaning, loyal political opponent. They are and have been, with the rise of the Tea Party, an insurgency. Because when they begin to attack the fundamental, the foundational aspects of government, like the ability of the government to pay its bills. You know, the Constitution says it shall be illegal for any government official to question the validity of the debt. And we let George W. Bush do it. All kinds of Republican members of the Congress do it all the time. And when you can't even fund the government, like right now, Right now, the federal government is funded through October? December?
Right. There's a debt ceiling crisis coming up. It's right around the corner, too. I mean, it's not that far away.
I mean, and the thing is, we now, because we've been through this a few times, we accept it as normal. That's just how things are now. It's not normal. It's not okay.
No. You don't put
But there we are. You know, there's a movement out there, and there, you know, I get a snicker from a few people every time I bring it up. Sooner than we recognize or realize, we're going to wind up with an Article 5 convention. And Katie, bar the door when that happens.
Then we are totally screwed.
Well, please elaborate for all of us that aren't in the know on Article 5.
A convention of the states.
Which means they can change the Constitution?
They can eliminate the Constitution.
Yeah.
The last time we had a constitutional convention, they went in with their fingers crossed, promising, you know, we're just going to tweak the Articles of Confederation a little bit, everything will be all right. And then they threw the Articles of Confederation out the window, and we got the Constitution that we have.
But if the Dems had any balls, couldn't we use something like that to our advantage?
No. No. Because the convention of the states will come about as the result of actions of state legislatures calling for it that are controlled by the Republican Party. And so they will, by definition, have a majority when they enter that convention. And there are some starry-eyed progressives who say, well, we can go there, too, and we can get the money out of politics. All we have to do is believe.
I'm sorry for interrupting you, Bob, but talk about a rallying cry. If Trump does manage to get impeached, that will bring these ignoramuses together like anything we've never seen before. So we're kind of hanging on to a double-edged sword here. I think our best case scenario is what something you mentioned again months ago in 18, taking over the House, getting rid of both Trump and Pence, and then, you know, you have hope.
Well, or
is that Mary Poppins land? I mean,
well, you can't get rid of anybody without Senate action.
Yep.
Senate has to try impeachments. But still, taking over one House of Congress would be sufficient to check the excesses of this government. Donald Trump cannot write a bill. Bills have to go through the Congress and land on his desk.
I don't think Donald Trump can write a paragraph, but that's neither here nor there.
The president cannot write a bill.
Right.
Bob, it seems like the right-wingers are getting awful nervous right now on these talk shows. Down here in Nashville, there's a conservative talk radio, WTN, and there's the Phil Valentine show, and he is the perfect apologist for Donald Trump. Every afternoon he comes on and tells you how great Trump is, and regardless of what Trump says, what kind of conflicts of interest Trump has, it's always somebody else's fault, and Trump really hasn't done anything wrong. So, you know, and the people believe him. That's the people here in Nashville are stupid enough to believe him.
Well, they believe what they want to believe. They hear what they want to hear, Charlie. And they want to, I don't know why, but they want to hear that they're all rugged individualists who don't need no help from the government except the help they get. But they don't want it to be thought of as help. And they're deserving of it. It's just them others that ain't deserving of it. They need, you know, they need help.
You take their Social Security check away from them, see how much help they don't think they need.
Well, no, but see, they deserve that Social Security check, Charlie. It's just that other people don't.
I know it.
And you know what the other people look like.
Those people.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying now. Well, I don't know. It just bumfuzzles me about these Republicans. It's like they're too damn stupid to think for themselves. So they have to have a commentator on a conservative radio station to make decisions for them.
Right. And see, the tell on that is that there's never a progressive on a conservative station unless they're brought on as a sort of punching bag in an unfair fight. You know, so you might have 3 hours of a conservative. Well, there's never 3 hours of a progressive that follows it.
What I would like to see really is somebody who's very knowledgeable, that's a, what they call a liberal, and somebody that's what they call a conservative, and put them on the same radio show and give them equal time. And let them have a debate and watch the person that they call a liberal eat the conservative's lunch.
Yeah, but that never happens. There's never a fair fight because it turns into a shouting match, and the right winger always gets the first word, the last word, and the middle word. Asa just said to you, Charlie. He said, "It's no surprise, Charlie. There are more Baptists in Nashville than there are people."
Yeah, that's probably true.
And for that, Asa gets a cowbell for that. Yeah, there are more Baptists in Nashville than people.
That's good.
Well, I can't see how somebody can claim to be religious and sit back and watch somebody die, or sit back and watch a police officer.
Well, but they believe in a God. They believe in a God who hates people as much as they do. And so the only people that get it are the people that have it coming. It's neo-Calvinism, where if you're well off, it's because it's proof that God loves you.
Oh, you're talking about the prosperity gospel now.
Well, no, it's most of mainline Christianity in the United States. Neo-Calvinism. To be wealthy is to be proven a member of the elect.
Well, how come the Bible says that a man cannot serve two masters?
Well, hell, you're actually assuming that they read the Bible. They only read the part of the Bible they like. They read the part of the Bible. They read the part of the Bible that talks about how a man shall not put on the raiment of a woe man, and a woe man shall not put on the raiment of a man, and they read the part of the New Testament where Paul's talking about how women's supposed to keep their mouth shut and cover up their whore hair in church. And if she's got a question, she needs to shut up and ask her husband when they get home. That's the part of the Bible they read. They don't read the other parts that challenge their beliefs.
Bob, these aren't Christians. These are Paulians. And there's a very distinctive difference between the two.
Well, what are you talking about? Paul invented Christianity.
But they don't follow the teaching of Christ. They're more behind Paul, the Apostle Paul. And
I know what you're getting at, but that it doesn't even extend that far. They are supporters of a Bible that in turn supports their bigotries and their biases, okay?
They pick and choose.
They pick
and choose.
And see, it's not for us to say that they aren't Christians, okay? Because Christianity has rules. You know, you have to believe that Jesus was born of a virgin, that he was the Son of God, that he was that he taught and he was crucified, and he died on the cross, and he was buried, and he rose again on the third day. And if you believe all that, you get to go to heaven and have pie in the sky when you die. It doesn't, there's nothing in there about don't be hateful.
And sit on a cloud and play a harp forever and ever.
There's nothing in there about, you know, don't be a bigot. There's nothing in there about don't be a racist.
I can't think of anything more boring, you know.
How are these, quote, Christians going to explain away the 8th chapter of Acts and the Ethiopian eunuch?
They're not going to explain it away.
Well, I mean,
they're just going to say that you obviously don't understand what you haven't been inspired by the Holy Spirit, and that you clearly are influenced by the devil, and shut up.
Right, right, right. Your thought process are being manipulated by the devil, and you're seeing things through his lens.
Hey, I've already had that. I've already had that conversation with Michael Del Giorno.
Well, see, there we go.
There you go.
And by the
hey,
way,
speaking of the devil,
it's about 10 minutes before the hour. We got about $140 to finish out fundraising for the evening, which would be really, really nice. And now let's check in with Rick and the concert report.
Yeah, speaking of the devil, I'm going to be going to see some, you know, satanic shows this weekend at Dodger Stadium. It's the so-called Classic West set of shows. Saturday night, late afternoon, into the evening, the Eagles, Steely Dan, and the Doobie Brothers. I'm not sure which order they're in necessarily. And then on Sunday night, I'm going to get to see Fleetwood Mac, Journey, and Earth, Wind, and Fire. So looking forward to that. And I also was thinking about catching Chris Isaak, if there's still tickets, at the Saban Theater in Beverly Hills tonight. I'd be
really down for the Fleetwood Mac concert, because I just love Stevie Nicks, and you know, when she, yeah, there she go again, she say, want to see, I've actually got her greatest hits album, Stevie Nicks, What the Hell Is That Woman Singing?
Yeah. That's the name of the album, huh?
Yeah, nobody mumbles quite like, I mean, she's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how many Doobies will be in the Doobie Brothers? I mean, now is this going to be the pre-Michael McDonald Doobie Brothers or the post-Michael McDonald Doobie Brothers?
Post, I think, yeah. It's going to be the post. I mean,
when they kind of turned into an R&B band, R&B pop ballad band.
Well, you know,
minute
they
by
they,
minute, by minute, by minute.
Yeah, I mean, remarkably,
I keep holding
Bob,
on.
I mean, I saw them with Chicago just a couple of months ago at the LA Forum, and they sounded a whole lot like they did back in the late 70s before Michael McDonald.
See, so, I like the pre-Michael McDonald Doobies a lot better than the post-Michael McDonald.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't, you know, there was not a single song they sung from the Minute by Minute album, which was very, you know, a big seller, you know. But I think the purists probably didn't like it, you know.
Up all night, I love that lyric. Up all night, I could not sleep. The whiskey that I drank was cheap. With shaking hands, I went and I lit up my last cigarette.
Mm.
I mean, that's a little music painting, right there.
That is, isn't it?
At least they haven't sold out. You know, Aerosmith has sold out to Walmart. I'm done with them, man.
No, well.
Totally well, done. They were better when they were high. Seriously.
Well, you know,
once they quit doing drugs, they went all to hell.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about Aerosmith. But I mean, even Led Zeppelin, you know, sold their song, you know, Rock and Roll to Cadillac. You know.
Yeah. True. By the way, Barkway in the chat room gets a cowbell. Doobie Brothers are now the Vaping Brothers.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And the Eagles, I mean, are the Eagles really the Eagles without Glenn Frey?
Well, they now have Bob Seger in place of Glenn Frey, so we'll see how it goes. I'll have to tell you all next Friday.
Please
Actually,
do.
Here next
that
Friday.
Should be an awesome show, man.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it might be quite interesting. It might get some you know, some Bob Seger songs as well that I did, you don't necessarily expect to hear from the Eagles. I saw, this past Sunday, I saw, if you could believe it.
Long and lonely journey east of Omaha.
Bob's favorite song.
You can hear the diesel engines roaring out that one lone song.
Hey, how about this?
I'm making lots of money, but I don't want you to think I'm enjoying it at all. Here I go again. On the road again. Here I go again. Making the dough. Here I go again.
Guess who I saw
this past Sunday in Pasadena? It was a free concert. It was a surf. Basically, they called it a surf party, surf music party. Do you remember the band Jan and Dean from the early 60s?
Yeah.
Jan has been dead for about 12 or 13 years, but Dean is still around, and they were tight. They played Hotel California, if you could believe that, a really good rendition of it. Great musicians. Dean Torrance still really has a good voice. Two Girls for Every Boy, of course, Surf City was their big hit. If Jan hadn't gotten into a car accident in 66, they probably would have had a lot more hits, but they played, you know, a ton of Beach Boys songs and, just a wide variety of music. It was a lot of fun. Really good stuff. I was surprised. Lori and I had a good time there. So I'm going with my son to the shows this weekend, though, because she's out of town in Santa Fe, actually, with a friend.
So, well, you will have to report back, Rick, on whether or not the Eagles play Turn the Page.
I think they will. I think they're going to do the old-time rock and roll and maybe night moves and,
If you could sneak a recorder in there, you have to send that to Bob, the Turn the Page cover. Okay. He's got to hear it, yeah.
There are some Bob Seger songs I love. That one song just drives me crazy.
I love that
slow ballad Main Street.
Oh, I love that too. Yes, yes.
Sunspot Baby. I mean,
oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Roll Me Away. I love that one.
That was good. That was good.
That was always good when I was out on the open road.
What? Song that they over and over again. I actually like it. Where, what is it? Standing. What the hell is that song? Oh, Like a Rock. I actually like that song.
Yeah, that one kind of got ruined.
I actually like.
I like know. An old rock.
Yeah, like a rock. Yeah, that's good stuff. It's good stuff. So it kind of reminds me of my youth, I guess. That's why I like it.
Well, it's time for us to get out of here. Earth, Wind, and Fire would be fun, except missing a founding member.
They almost all of them are, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of you make do with what you got. You basically have to go with the band you have, not the one you want.
Yeah, that's that isn't that.
To paraphrase Don Rumsfeld.
That's a line from Donald and the Rumsfeld.
It's Rumsfeldian.
Yeah, Donald and the Rumfields.
Rumsfeldian.
All right, you guys have yourself a good evening, Sparky. Go ahead.
They're going to be live at Leeds next week, Bob.
Donald and the Rumsfelds.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll catch that on Sirius, Steve.
Well, you guys have a good night. It's been a lot of fun. I tell you what, I enjoyed the heck out of being back this evening, and I'm looking forward to next week, something fierce. So, thank you all for joining in and making it a fun conversation tonight, as you always do. Back with more on Monday, and we'll see how things go from there. Thank you, Sparky, for moderating again, as always. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky. And even though we didn't have a midweek program, our midweek utility
Chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. We hang on by a thread, but we don't quit. We do not quit. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.